The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Torn from headlines and deadlines and possibly tomorrow's breadlines, it's Football Weekly. On a Monday all a jitter with transfer tickers, we talk big money moves. Pow! Falcao to Old Trafford. Unexpected decision from Man United, but if you can recapture the form of Rotmi Amadeus, could be a winner. Plus, there's football too. Liverpool throwing their Sterling around. Chelsea, that 9-goal Saturday thriller. Swansea getting high with a special Siggy. Plus, Burnley Man United, a deserved point for the Minnows, and Burnley weren't too disappointed either, etc. and so on. Across Europe, there's the latest news. Germany, France, sit on Spain, Bandini on Milan and Torres, and much, much more in this Football Weekly. Yeah, welcome everybody then to an absolutely huge Football Weekly. It is a Football Weekly looking back on a crazy weekend in the Premier League and abroad, but it's also a Football Weekly on deadline day. So we've assembled a very crack team of people to talk us through it. Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Good to see you. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi to you all. Jacob, yeah. You've literally just come off the Guardian's very own rolling updated
It's been an
breaking,
exciting morning.
Yeah, I bet it has.
Know, when you've been watching Alan Kirbishley since 7 o'clock in the morning, that's a big day.
Certainly
that
is.
That's a big day. At one point, the presenter said to him, Alan, you're still here. I was kind of expecting, he's like, still here, not got anywhere else you want to be. Alan.
But they had some stuff to talk about. Man United, they may only be 37th or something, I think, in the Premier League at the moment. But they're top of our agenda today, thanks to their daring swoop.
Yeah, they've signed... they haven't signed him yet, as we...
Or have they not?
No, because he's got to have a medical, Radamel Falcao.
Hey, and that's by no means a given.
Indeed. And, so he missed the World Cup, and he's only just come back. And he's almost 29, Falcao. He's had three operations on his knee in his career. So, is he going to be... Well, his game is very much based on, you know, being pacey and aggressive and quick and strong. So, the Premier League is a very demanding league. Is he going to be able
to
step up to that?
Well, that's the question. I'll come back to you for an answer in a second. Here's some people posting their opinion, not entirely positive about the move. Not Chris Taylor says Woodward has Balotelli'd it, went out for a defender and midfielder, came back with a quad bike and a Nerf gun. Mikhail Jongsma, our top pal, says this move is very much Alanis Morissette, this transfer by Man United. It is a nice spoon, though. I like that. That's well done. Arsenal gentlemen, Manchester United are pleased to announce the signing of Radamel fur coat and no knickers.
See, I heard we were going to be talking about the high-profile transfer of a lank-haired striker and did all my prep on George Boyd's move from Hull to Burnley.
Hey, Ben, press the Badoom Tish button.
It's weird. We were kind of discussing this before the pod, but Falcao, all the clubs who wanted him... Yeah. Are in the Champions League except one, and that's the club he, or indeed possibly George Mendes, his super agent, has decided to go to. So presumably it's for purely financial reasons.
But he had his heart set on Madrid, Falcao, and he's not gone there.
They even tweeted it, bless.
You know, they have decided not to go for it. They've got Javier Hernandez on loan instead.
Mm.
A great, great signing. But Falcao is on. He's going to be on. It's a £6 million loan fee. Is what's
I think
being,
the total
and then it's going to be
outlay
so
is €36 million, which for a loan is absolutely massive.
He's on loads at Monaco, and he's probably now going to be, if the negotiations all go to plan, probably be more than Wayne Rooney.
I've seen a bit of him, and I think you may have done as well, avid viewer of Ligue 1 that you are, Barry, at Monaco. Last season, he only played half of it because of doing his crochet. He scored 9 goals in there. He looked massively grumpy the whole time, never particularly. He never lit up again the way, say, a Suarez or another one of those kind of massive global strikers would do. He's a functional striker, but since the move to Monaco, he seems to have lost a little bit of that fire. I'm not saying he won't get it back.
He could do. I mean, it could turn out to be a brilliant signing for them because probably 2 years ago, he's maybe the best striker in Europe. you know, up there with the likes of Suarez and Van Persie and whoever else you want to put in that bracket. But, you know, since then, he's not done a lot. And, you know, so it is a gamble. If it pays off, it could be brilliant, but...
What's strange is that I think you could say some of the same things as you say about Falcao, about Cavani, and maybe 2 or 3 years ago you'd have been talking about these two as the top number nines in the world. And he's gone to France, and at different circumstances, because my issue with what's happened to him at Paris Saint-Germain is you've got a project where Ibrahimovic is already at the centre of it, and Cavani really only came into his own at Napoli when they said, you are our through-the-middle striker and you're going to lead the line. So, but it is interesting that both of them have had this sort of similar career trajectory where they both were... went to Ligue 1 at the same time and haven't panned out in quite the way that they were exposed to.
Well, Cavani scored a blinder, of course, yesterday. And when we might talk about a little bit later on. But United, though, Barry, even if it does work out, and I hate to be negative about an exciting player going to the Premier League and all that, blah, 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 but he's not going to play centre-back, is he? He's not going to play
right-back. He's not what they need, but it's something. It's strange. I mean, I'm not sure what... Edward Woodward, United's chief executive, how he goes about his business, what goes on in his head. Is this his purchase, or does Louis van Gaal approve of it? But it's certainly not what United need. And, you know, by the time this goes out, they may well have signed a defender or a central midfielder or some of the players they do need. You know, they certainly seem ready to ship a lot of players out.
Right. Daley Blind has come in. So that's something. But it looks like Roger may never actually be a United player because of, is it issues over third party, you go where his rights lie?
Work permit as well, was it?
And not? Work permit as well. But I think there's also some ownership.
Apparently there's problems, he's having problems getting a work permit. I don't know if this is in any way related to a legal action he's facing at home over an assault where he's alleged to have hit a neighbour across the head with a bottle. He's facing charges for that. Then they're going back 3 or 4 years. So that might be an issue as far as he's getting a work permit is concerned.
All right, well, they brought in Rojo, but he hasn't quite made it through the red tape yet. Daley Blind and Herrera, who, early days and that. And Shaw, of course, who's...
It could be bad news for Mata, this. If you know, he's been playing in this number 10, but it doesn't really feel like Van Gaal is that impressed by him or that keen on him. The fact that they, for a start, bought Di Maria and another left-footed kind of creative player, could see, you know, Wayne Rooney moving back and Van Persie.
Right.
But then again, you know, just talk of Van Persie, the knee sort of, his knee's kind of flaring up as well. So.
Yeah. Here's Dublin Dilettante saying, if Di Maria can't coexist with Mata, does that make him an anti-Mata? The two did start on Saturday. Where Di Maria was he Man United's best player at Turf Moor? For what it was worth?
Maybe. The crossbar as well.
Right. But still, they only managed a 0-0.
Yeah, against Burnley had some good chances in the first half as well. Only caught the first half, but that United defence looked ropey again.
Yeah, I think Burnley... I mean, I said last week I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley won, and that was very difficult to see either team not conceding, so neither of them conceded, needless to say. But it wasn't a particularly entertaining game, and Burnley will be pleased with a point, probably should have taken three, and Manchester United again just looked very, very unconvincing. And Louis van Gaal has said it, you know, repeatedly it will take time, and he has a plan and all that. But he's played four, won none, and hasn't got off to a good start at all.
Well, there you go. That's Man United. Further away still from the top of the table, and indeed the top four, after this weekend's antics. And we'll be talking about some of the other action right after this. Well, got to talk about Everton-Chelsea, haven't we, really? Saturday tea time. Crikey. Was that entertainment?
That was,
are we not entertained?
It was literally entertainment. It was a very entertaining. I was going to say it was a great game. I mean, there was lots
wrong
with it.
Best of games. It was the worst of games.
But as Mourinho grumped about after the game, indeed, there was some terrible defending on display. And actually, I was just not two goalkeepers you expect to see conceding nine goals in a single afternoon either. But that said, some of the goals were brilliant. I thought in defeat, Eto'o's header was fairly spectacular. Costa obviously was brilliant again. He looks pretty terrifying at the moment, to be honest with you, and I'm sure that may inform slightly the desire for a player like Falcao, although I suppose United aren't necessarily dealing in the same part of the table as Chelsea are at the moment. But this Chelsea team looks pretty scary because they can make all those mistakes and they can not perform anything like their most cohesive and still score six goals against you.
All right. Five goals scored in 10 minutes and 34 seconds. It was crazy. This was billed as the first big test for Chelsea coming into the match. Having seen Everton at work defensively, how big a test were they, really?
Well, yeah, but they lost that game last season, Chelsea. And they don't have a particularly good record at Goodison Park. They've had quite a few defeats there. And I think, that was probably their first defeat of the season last year at an equivalent stage, actually, when they went there and lost 1-0. The difference that day was, I think, they had Eto'o up front, making his debut, and I think maybe he missed a chance and then went off, and then Torres came on. This time they have Diego Costa, who some people doubted him, but you know, he started like a house on fire, I really liked the first goal, but the second goal as well, where he made both of them look like idiots, leaving them on the floor. And he's also, you know, he's got that sort of little Suarez element to him as
well. He's got a bit of bite to him, hasn't he? Oh, well, sorry, not in that sense.
Not that sense, we should make very clear. Yeah. But having a go at Seamus Coleman.
Absolutely.
After the,
I didn't like the way he riffed on Seamus Coleman's own goal pain.
Mm.
It was uncalled for, and Roberto Martinez didn't like it either. Had words.
But I bet Mourinho loved it. It's exactly the sort of thing that Mourinho likes for his players. It's the same thing, the same attitude, and he was there as well, same attitude that someone like Drogba had. It was the same attitude I thought that Schneider had at Inter. That's why I liked him so much. It was just a little bit of...
I can't remember
the person who said this, but it was someone saying that it's not Costa's not the one who's getting angry. He's making you... He looks like he's angry, but actually what he's doing is making you angry and putting you off your game. And
right.
Yeah.
All right, Chelsea, can anything stop them? Could Swansea stop them? Because straight after international break, it's on the way, listeners, it's on the way. After that, though, Chelsea's first game back will be with their joint leaders, the other team with a perfect record so far, Gary Monk, Swans. Boom.
They've been very impressive, and Gary Monk has been very impressive. I must admit, I was sceptical about how good a job he would do, but once again... The Swansea overlords have shown they seem to know what they're doing, although it is early doors yet. Mm. But he's been hugely impressive in the way he manages the team, in the way he speaks to the media in every department. He's very well qualified for the job. I think he's got all the necessary qualifications. Mm. And I believe he has indeed, like Sean Dyche, read Jonathan Wilson's Inverting the Pyramid.
There you go.
So...
But for a man whose previous contribution to Team Unity was waving a brick at a Spanish player, it's an astonishing feat of managerial coherence that he's pulling off there.
Looking at him now, you suspect that there was probably good reason for him to wave the brick in the direction of the Spanish player. And he's currently the manager of the Swansea team, and the Spanish player has gone off to Qatar or somewhere to play.
Yeah, and look at the numbers. They've had 3 wins out of 3. They've scored 6. They've only conceded 1. Those goals at the weekend against West Brom, or admittedly it was West Brom, but there were some really special scoring.
Well, you say admittedly it was just West Brom, but West Brom were very impressive defensively in Southampton the previous week, a match I saw, and thought they were, you know, so they're not world beaters by a stretch of imagination, but they can defend.
Right, okay. But it wasn't, say, Chelsea or...
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, or Chelsea. But it will be next time. And how about that Routledge goal? Was that your favourite, the Routledge goal? I like Dyer's as well.
Of that game, Routledge's was fantastic, yeah.
How about Gylfi Sigurdsson?
Well, he's been absolutely instrumental in their success. He's, I think, of all the goals they've scored this season, is it 5?
I've got 4 here, but that may be...
He's provided 3 assists, scored 1, and...
Well, it says he assisted 4 goals, so 5, then he scored 1. Yeah, sorry. So he's assisted 4 goals, which is as many as he managed in 58 Premier League appearances for Spurs.
Yeah, it's weird the way he never really quite cracked it at Spurs. Mm. I don't know why.
It is weird, isn't it? Speaking of Spurs, they were involved in a bit of a game on Sunday when they hosted their old pals Liverpool, who'd won 9-0 on aggregate against the Lily Whites in last season's two encounters. This time, a more restrained 3-0 victory for the visitors at White Hart Lane. Boy, let's talk a little bit about Liverpool. They scored some special goals, didn't they, Paolo?
Yeah, well, you talk about 9-0 over the last two games. If Balotelli had had his shooting, I was going to say shooting boots on, actually needed his shooting head on with that header at the far post. But if Balotelli had taken some of those chances, it could have been even more one-sided scoreline. They were very good, Liverpool, and it was just very apparent very early on the way that game was going to go. Tottenham weren't able to contain Sterling. They didn't seem to have any sort of handle on the movement Liverpool making up front. I thought, other than his finishing, which was off, I thought Balotelli seemed to integrate pretty well, pretty smoothly into it. So
yeah, we'll come back to Balotelli in a second, because he was almost a kind of sideshow to the real story. You mentioned Sterling, who was electric. I thought Sturridge was brilliant as well.
Yeah. No, well, I was saying it's one of the best performances Pochettino had at Southampton was against Liverpool in March 2013 when they beat them 3-1. They played them off the park, and then he won at Anfield last season. And then that game last season, Roger sort of, I think maybe for the first time, used that kind of diamond formation, and they won 3-0 at St Mary's. Did the same again yesterday with Allen and Henderson and Gerrard behind Sterling, and every time Liverpool went forward and passed it round, really sharp in midfield, winning the ball back. They just got it to Sterling so quickly, and he just looks outstanding at the moment. Mm. Such a good player. You know, he's basically saying to Greg before, he's got everything at the moment, Sterling. Yeah, he passing, finishing, movement, vision. And that run, if he hadn't decided to do what he did at the end of that run, would have been...
And Brendan Rodgers with a top funny afterwards. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He went into the penalty area like Ricky Villa, finished like Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
So as I say, hilarious. I mean, for a manager, that's top work. So he got the first goal. Great work from Sturridge in the build-up, and Jordan Henderson with the ball across. And then there was that penalty, which was a bit controversial, but frankly, he did put a hand on Joe Allen, didn't he, Eric Dyer?
That was a penalty.
Yeah, it was a penalty, says Barry. Okay, good. And then I enjoyed the third goal as well with good old Andros Townsend.
He probably sealed his fate.
He's on his way now, is that right? Andros Townsend?
Well, Sky's man in the yellow tie outside the Spurs training ground, who is, I've made a list, Jamie Weir.
All right.
They're all wearing yellow ties today. Yeah. It's presumably in tribute to Jim White. But anyway, Jamie Weir reported that despite widespread opinion to the contrary, apparently Andros Townsend won't be going anywhere.
Oh,
well,
there
today.
You go. That's something for you, Southampton.
Doesn't seem to have cooled their interest.
Possibly after he gave the ball away straight away after coming on yesterday.
Right. Well,
Alberto Moreno's great run, great finish.
It was like fantastic watching finish. Jonana Rhys or something, all over, running up the left flank and banging in with his left foot.
Although it wasn't the greatest run and score a goal move of the weekend, as we'll discuss very shortly, right after we do our little Balotelli chat, because as I think Paul Doyle was writing in today's fantastic sort of way Guardian, the most eye-catching thing about the player's display was what we've been warned not to expect: hard work, chasing back, evidence that he is engaged with the team ethic that Rodgers had fostered.
Yeah, I mean, this is a slightly tricky one, and I didn't like Rodgers' post-game line about we've taught him how to defend at corners, because frankly that's just nonsense. The idea that Balotelli in his career has never defended a corner is false. I've seen him do it, and it's ridiculous to suggest that Mourinho would never have asked him to defend a corner when they're at Inter. It adds to this mythology of Mario that he's this ridiculous character, which, you know, there are things about him that are a bit out there, but this idea that he's never ever tried for his team is not true. At his best, he tries very hard. I think you've seen that at times for Italy most prominently, but he certainly, when he first was at Milan, he was a player who was working hard and trying. The problem is just that he gets into ruts, and he gets into sometimes just individual games where he doesn't like some decisions that go against him at the beginning of a game, and he throws his hands up and says, well, that's that, and I'm in a bad mood. And sometimes it's longer than that, like what happened towards the end at Milan, where, frankly, there was a lot going on in his life on and off the pitch, and he just didn't seem to have his head there anymore. The idea that he's not someone who works hard for a team doesn't track back. Actually, I think he's always been quite good at tracking back, and he's someone who doesn't, one of the criticisms of him at Milan, doesn't spend enough time in the penalty area. He's too busy coming out.
I think as well, it's going to be difficult enough for him to try and escape this caricature of himself that's built in the media, and probably the last thing he needs is his manager adding to the myth that he's this lazy bugger, you know, who doesn't try.
Yeah. That's enough of the funny stuff, Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
Stick to football managing. I mentioned runs. Pow! Mamy Birim Juf, 16 seconds, 8 touches. That incredible run from a Man City corner to scoring past Joe Hart in a George Weah versus Verona, that sunny day at San Siro-esque move. Wow, what a goal that was, Jacob.
Yeah, it was really good, although from the City point of view, I think they were just annoyed that they didn't just foul him. In a cynical outlook on the world.
Or that Joe Hart didn't just
dribble.
Fall out of the way.
Right. Did you see that stat in today's Guardian that since Pellegrini has come in, City have scored 140 goals against all teams, apart from Stoke. They've scored one goal against
one goal in three
games, yeah.
They've scored
something like 140 against every other team.
Wow, that's crazy, isn't it? So Stoke have what they call the Indian side. I've never quite understood what that means. What is the Indian side, Barry? Do you know? The knock. That's another expression. You've got the knock on them. I don't know what that means.
There was another tremendous stat in the...
Listeners, do you know? Help us out. Sorry, Paolo, your stat.
I was just interrupting on the
knock. No, go ahead.
There's another trend stat in the Times, I thought, which was City had 8 players in their matchday squad who cost more than Stoke's entire starting 11.
Eight individual players
who cost more than the whole starting 11.
All right. When the teams do come back from the international break, Man City have an interesting run of games. They've got Bayern, part of their exciting Champions League group, which also features CSKA Moscow and Roma. They've also got Chelsea, and it all begins with Arsenal at the Emirates. Full might of Arsenal of top forwards will be lined up against City.
Top.
And Joe Hart. That's a frightening prospect, isn't it? How many will he ship against Yaya Sanogo? Yaya Sanogo, because they're not going to sign anybody else, Paolo, are they?
Well, he hasn't ruled it out, actually. He gave a sort of weird, meandering answer after the Leicester game where he kind of said, well, we're going to maybe look at signing someone, but we don't need to sign someone, but maybe we should. Mm. It was a strange answer, but it's possible. If they do, I'm sure it won't be
Record two versions, because frankly, at this point, he might make us look silly otherwise.
So yeah, that's true.
Leicester was a 1-1. The Leicester game finished 1-1, and a lot of people saying Arsene, go out and sign somebody. So well done, Arsene, for signing whoever you signed, because that's a lot of people thought that he was going to go, no, I'm too clever for this, and I'm not going to sign. But he did, and they're not left with. Or alternatively, listeners, is the man insane? Is he a raving loon? You can't possibly approach this season with just Yaya Sanogo and this Joel Campbell fellow he doesn't want to put on the field, with Giroud out for the next, 3.5 months? Mm. What's going on, Paolo?
The Sanogo issue, I'm not sure. I think it's beginning to feel like a Wenger blind spot, although he seemed to acknowledge a little bit after this game that maybe this is not the calibre of striker that Arsenal need at the moment. Joel Campbell, I'd like to see given a run through the middle. I mean, he has played leading the line before. I think he's capable of it.
In the Greek league, yeah.
But yeah.
And in the Champions League, where he was very effective against top defenders, Man United.
But the issue is sometimes just having the sort of player who actually fits a role. And I think that's the problem Arsenal have had with Giroud the last few years. People love to get on at him, but I still, whenever I see him play, I think Arsenal look like a different team just because they have an actual legitimate striker who belongs in that position. And it's something that Wenger has always been loath to address through his career, and maybe that's because his occasional forays into that department haven't been so successful, Franny Jeffers being the most obvious one to bring up, even though it's now quite a long time ago. But yes, at the moment, it's not looking very fluid for Arsenal. I do think that a little bit of patience is needed, because Sanchez, in my opinion, is a great player who hasn't shown it yet, even though he scored at the weekend, because he just isn't quite in sync with everybody. And I think that Cazorla has started the season reasonably well, and when you get those two on the same page, there's a potential to be very interesting. Whether or not that's going to be in time for City, I have my doubts. The other thing, of course, is that they've still got Walcott to come back, who has played through the middle and is capable of it. Problem being that, as with so many players, unfortunately, at Arsenal in the last few years, you don't know how long Walcott will be around for before he gets hurt again.
Mm. All right, well done Leicester, though, eh? They're off to a good start this season, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they got a very creditable draw against Everton on the and they came back twice in that game. And again, they showed their bounce-back ability against Arsenal, because wouldn't have been surprising at all if that goal had gone in, Sanchez's goal, and then they just kind of collapsed. But it was pretty quick, actually, wasn't it, their equaliser? So, and they had the chances to win it. If Ojoa had taken that chance in the second half, who knows if Arsenal would have come back, because they certainly didn't do much going forward in that second half, and probably Leicester had the better chances.
Did you want to say anything, Paolo, or should we just wrap this up here?
I was just going to say it's interesting with Ojoa, because a lot of people are sceptical about them paying that amount of money for him, but actually, a couple of goals so far.
And they've both been in the 22nd minute of the match.
Mm.
It's interesting. Well, that's enough on that right now. We've got more Premier League on the way. A whole load of exciting Euro talk right after this.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to take 10% off.
It's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, Sid. Barry's
How
here.
Are you?
Jacob's here. Paolo Brandini's here.
Hello, everybody.
Woof. You were saying everything's dominated by Real Madrid and Barcelona, but I tell you, one lot who weren't dominated by Real Madrid, and that's Real Sociedad. Pow! Have some 4-2 in your face, Carlo Ancelotti. I bet his eyebrow raised when he saw that.
Yeah, I bet it did. Pow, indeed. Although, weirdly, you say they were not dominated by Real Madrid. They were completely dominated by Real Madrid for the first half an hour. Madrid were 2-0 up.
Yeah.
Could have been 3-4. It looked like this was going to be a really massive hammering. They got the first goal kind of more or less out of nothing. And then they were brilliant, Real Sociedad, after that moment. And this is a club whose manager's under huge pressure, who really haven't played well, who were knocked out of Europe in midweek, where the fans had, well, obviously not all of them, but a significant number of fans had agreed that this was going to be the game in which they protested, in which they called for the manager's head. And then they go and turn around a 4-2. You know what? They hadn't beaten Real Madrid. The last time they beat Real Madrid, and I think, in fact, it was 4-2, Xabi Alonso scored, and he scored four, Real Sociedad.
Wow, how funny. It's funny you should mention him, because people have drawn some connection.
Well, Real Madrid could do with buying a couple of players today, Jimbo, and I think maybe there's a guy called Angel Di Maria at Madrid and a guy called Xabi Alonso at Bayern Munich. Both of them would be quite good for them.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? They let these two go, particularly Xabi Alonso, who brought a certain balance to the team. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how they do this year after year, where she's Schneider, they let him go for buttons and he goes and wins the treble. Iron Robin, how they must look at him and think, phew, could have done with him. But they've let Xabi Alonso go and he's gone to Bayern Munich. And I'm just wondering, so is it a weakened, have they lost that balance of the side? Do you think there's a...
Well, I think they probably have. I mean, long term, we'll have to see, because I suppose in a way you could say they've upgraded from Angel Di Maria to James Rodriguez and from Xabi Alonso to Toni Kroos. Now, Alonso's going to be 33 in November.
Yeah.
But I personally think that the balance he was vital to that. Angel Di Maria was as well, but he's had the energy and ability to cover a lot of ground in a midfield three that no one else in the team has got. In fact, they went to what was basically 4-4-2 last night, admittedly without Cristiano Ronaldo, and actually their statistics without Ronaldo are pretty poor anyway. So I think that's significant. I suppose in Madrid's defence, there's two things you'd say. One, I guess, is that the fee for Angel Di Maria was gigantic. So there's a certain degree of defence there, and that Angel Di Maria himself pushed for a departure, albeit pushed for a departure within the context of believing the club didn't really want him at boardroom level.
Mm-hmm.
Xabi Alonso, in Madrid's defence, he wanted to go. He decided that this was a... I mean, to be honest, this was a move that he was not that far from making back in January when his contract was running into its last 6 months. So I'm not entirely sure it's Madrid's fault. In fact, I think it probably isn't Madrid's fault. And actually, you know, long-term, Toni Kroos could well prove to be a very good player.
Certainly true.
Well, obviously, he is a very good player, so that's a ridiculous thing to say. But, I mean, could well prove to be able to play that role.
Right, OK. Well, Sid, though, with Real Madrid stumbling then against Real Sociedad and Barcelona winning, but Messi apparently picking up an injury. I'm not sure if that's
a pretty minor one, they say. Just a bit of a muscle strain, and with it being international week, I wonder about that.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair point. But with Atletico continuing to look strong and adding Alessio Cerchi to their
Is he good, Jimbo? I must confess.
No, he is.
I
think he's really good. Paolo, what do you think? Alessio Cerchi?
Yeah, I think he's an excellent player. I think he's versatile. He can play him out wide, although actually he was playing his best football for Torino just behind the attack. He's creative. He's fast. He's a talented player. I like him.
So you got him now at the other side of Madrid. And Valencia, Peter Lim, now confirmed as the boss there. Well, they were linked with a move for Negredo. I don't know what else they've got up their sleeves on this final day of the transfer window. But have you got other teams coming into the title race in the way that Atletico Madrid did last season?
I think that's a step too far for Valencia, to be honest, although they've looked okay this season. They were a little bit fortunate against Malaga this weekend because of an early red card for Sergi Darder. But I think they will get stronger, although you're always a little bit nervous about the true motives behind the people running the club. I think Atletico Madrid, they actually weren't that great against Eibar this weekend, even though they won. And they finally got their trophy, by the way. 105 days late, but they did get the league championship trophy this weekend. They will be strong this year, but I'm not sure they will be strong enough, because I think you're seeing that Diego Costa does quite a lot of things on his own, and that Atletico are trying to create a new structure so that they can get a couple of players to do what Costa basically did without any help. I think Atletico will do very well this year and will pick up an awful lot of points because they will be stronger than most teams, but I still suspect it'll be the top two, and I don't think Valencia is strong enough to break into that yet.
Lovely stuff there from Sid. In other Euro news, Bayern now without Xavi Alonso only drew their game away at Schalke, and Borussia Dortmund won. Kagawa's now back there. Great business for them. Bayer also won, so it's looking ever so interesting. I think Bayern have dropped down to sixth. Sixth!
Wow. In decline.
They certainly are. It's all over. In France, PSG had had a slow start to the season. Ibra had got himself injured, and of course they struggled without him. He came back, though, this weekend as they were facing high-flying Saint-Étienne, who were themselves bidding to go top of the table. But Ibra was having none of that. He scored a hat-trick. PSG won 5-0. The opening PSG goal was a real doozy. I would urge, if you're a fan of really terrible goalkeeping decisions, then I would urge you to try and watch this one, because it's a back pass from a Saint-Étienne player, which the goalkeeper tries to play back out with the outside of his foot and basically just turns it into his own net. And then Ibra comes up and gives him a little...
lovely.
Never mind. Yeah, Ibra was on fire. He was fired up. He was smiling. He was snarling. It was the full, invigorating stuff to watch. In Italy, Serie A has now got underway. Paolo, as you know all too well, in the interest of time, let's just quickly say that Juve won. Roma won against Fiorentina. So that was a big game, 2-0 there. At Milan, perhaps, were the story of the weekend, were they, with their 3-1 win over Lazio and their signing of young Fernando Torres?
Yeah, probably. I think that they were the big one. I think Stefan El Shaarawy was absolutely sensational. Just destroys Stefan De Vrij, who was everyone was excited about Stefan De Vrij and Lazio. Good signing over the summer and probably will still turn out to be, but I think was not prepared for the pace of El Shaarawy. I think all of Milan's fans maybe had forgotten a little bit quite what he was capable of, because it's been pretty much a whole year lost in his career after sort of coming through in 2012-13, lost to injury. So it's exciting, and it's sort of funny, because they had in Gazzetta dello Sport this morning, there was this big full-page advert starring Mario Balotelli. And it was juxtaposed right next to the player ratings, and he was wearing an Italy shirt. And, of course, Balotelli hasn't been called up for the latest Italy squad, and El Shaarawy, who hadn't played for a full year, has.
Right, Mario Balotelli actually suspended for their next competitive match, so that plays some part, perhaps, in Conte's thinking. They have got a friendly as well, yeah. But I'm not sure. I would imagine that might be
The reason it's interesting is, of course, because what we talked about last time with the Puma sponsorship deal, there was a big discussion of whether or not Conte was even going to feel free to drop Balotelli, who's also a Puma player, and he has.
Possibly a bit of a statement. All right, well, this was Milan-Lazio Sunday tea time at the San Siro, and Pippo Inzaghi's debut in Serie A on the Milan bench, and Milan looked fast. They didn't dominate the game. Lazio had plenty of chances, but they looked exciting, didn't they, Milan?
Yeah, I think that's really the big takeaway from it, is that he's setting them up in a counter-attacking style. He let Lazio come onto them a little bit, and at the end of the game, they retreated too much, and it got a little bit dangerous. Mm. But the way they're going to play looks exciting, and if they are able to play quickly on the counter-attack, they had this tremendous quote from Inzaghi, who said that Torres had...
set records for agility and explosiveness in his medical test that no Milan player had ever matched.
Yes. Now, probably it's wise to take that with a tiny pinch of salt, because it's not the first time that Milan have come out with these sorts of statements. I'm pretty certain there was something, it wasn't speed, but there were similar claims made about Beckham when he arrived, about he had performed better than anyone had ever performed before. And I actually had an Italian journalist tweeting me just before I came on saying that the same happened even when Ricardo Oliveira joined the club. There, so there is a certain...
So the bar was already high, and he's got even higher.
Of hyperbole. But the idea that this team is going to try and play fast football is great, because last year it became very plodding, it became very predictable, and I think this is what Milan need to be competitive again.
I'm really excited. I'm not quite sure why, about seeing Torres play now. And I know that he was a complete blowout at Chelsea, and essentially he's a cast-off that they couldn't wait to get rid of, and Milan being desperate had picked him up. But there's just something about this. I think, call me ridiculous, call me an old romantic, I just think it's going to work.
I'd love if it did. How did Pippo Inzaghi comport himself on the touchline?
He gave it the full Inzaghi celebration.
Tracksuit or suit?
No, he was in suit.
When Montari scored to make it 2-0, he did a full sprint down the sideline job and hugged all the players and then got told off by the referee for it. He was into it.
Did he cross the line? He strayed over the wrong side of the line.
That's so unlike him.
It seems like he might have done, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Also, about to sign on the dotted line for an Italian side is Mika, or indeed Micah Richards.
Yeah, on his way to Fiorentina, which is interesting. I mean, I had and still have high hopes for Fiorentina this season. Obviously, a lot still hinges on Giuseppe Rossi and if he ever gets fit, but they managed to keep hold of Cuadrado, which was a bit of a coup for them this summer. And, well, I'm saying this now, there's still time for me to be proved wrong, but the directors have said he's not going anywhere. And I think that maybe the one thing they needed was a bit of shoring up at the back. So interesting move. And I think this is something that Amy Lawrence wrote about for the BBC just before the weekend. Ashley Cole going and playing abroad, something that apparently he toyed with much sooner in his career.
He had a solid debut as well, didn't he?
And he had a solid debut. I don't think it's, I think it's not bad for English football in general if a few more English players decide to try that.
I can think of one or two I'd like to go and play abroad, actually. But anyway, let's also just finish off this little Italian section by saluting the very, very great Toto Di Natale, who, at the end of last season, said, "This is it. I'm hanging up my boots." But he hasn't, Paolo, has he?
He hasn't.
Hansi.
He's opened the season with two goals. They had a whole celebration for him because he's been at Udinese for 10 years now.
Really?
So, of course, he's number 10 shirt, 10 years, and actually playing against Empoli, which is the town where his wife is from. It's a town where he's going to retire to. It's a town that he has very close links to. So it was a big occasion for him there in Udine, and he scored two, and the first one was practically laid on a plate for him, but he's going to score a bunch of goals even at 36 years old, because that's what he does.
He has scored, let me get this right, 8 goals in his last 4 Serie A matches. He's what, 36?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 36 and barely trains.
Right, that's the
50
thing.
50 years he's barely trained because of the knee injury he's had, so it's literally just managing the injury all through the week and then going out and scoring goals at the weekend.
It's incredible. And he got 4 the other day in the Coppa Italia in a single match, and he's now at 195 in Serie A with a full season ahead of him. So he's, I think, 10 behind Robbie Baggio, isn't he?
I think that's right. Yeah.
7th on the all-time list, an absolute star, and look forward to seeing him in action as the season progresses. Right. Yep. Barry, still about 5 minutes for you to complete that drawing. And so let me just tell you that, oh, look, Hockaday is gone. There's a shock from Leeds after they lost that League Cup game to Bradford. Beppe Cennino resigning at Watford. Nobody's quite sure why. The second in the table.
Second in the table, yeah.
Yeah. Fulham, in the meantime,
got a point.
They got a point.
Well done.
I was at Felix Magath's press conference last Friday.
Tell us some crazy Felix stories.
He's a very strange man. Nothing that has gone wrong at Fulham is his fault, according to him. It's Mohamed Al-Fayed's fault, it's John Arne Riise's fault, it's Breda Hengeland's fault, it's your fault, Bandini's fault, Steinberg's fault, everyone's fault, not his.
Yeah, I think
because he only got there at the end of February.
Right.
And what on earth was he supposed to do with the mess these terrible players and their former owner had left behind?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. But he's got a point anyway. Well done him, despite the situation there. Fulham have released or sold 35 players who appeared for them last season.
Apparently he's used about, I think he's used something like 50 players.
Well, Philippe, yeah.
I told him that, it was Philippe. I couldn't remember where I'd heard this stat. So someone at the press conference was making the point that he'd used a lot of players. And he was sort of going, I haven't really. And I said, you've used 53. He looked quite shocked.
Yeah. There you go.
I can't see him being there much longer, to be honest. I suspect there could be an open revolt of the players if he isn't.
Blackpool are bottom with 5 defeats in a row. And in League One, everyone's new favourite team, MK Dons. I'm right, aren't I? They followed up their 4-0 defeat at Man U with a 2-0 defeat of Crawley. Crawley, another very popular side, aren't they?
John Gregory's Crawley.
Is he still there?
He's just started.
Oh, is he just started?
Yeah, he's there.
All right, I'm getting confused. John Gregory out of Aston Villa.
Derby fame, yeah.
All right, okay. Back to the Premier League then, just to finish off. And Aston Villa. Barry, they laughed at you when you predicted 2 seasons in a row that Aston Villa would win the title. But you know what?
I think I'm right this time.
They're third in the table.
Yeah.
They beat Hull this weekend.
But I wasn't predicting top four finish. No, I was a win. They would win the Premier League.
Win the Premier League. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this season and last.
And what did you say? Remind me, what did you say you'd do if they didn't win the Premier League?
I said I'd club you over the head with a frozen shank of lamb.
Oh, dear. That was an episode of... That's so bizarre. Tales of the Unexpected, do you remember? With Susan George as the murderess. And she... it was a very, very clever episode, this. She basically battered her husband to death. And the police came, and they were all over, this is definitely a domestic killing here. But they couldn't find the murder weapon. And at the end of it, they kind of went, oh, well, sorry that we've accused you of this. You must feel terrible, etc. And she said, that's fine. By the way, would you like a slice of my freshly roasted lamb, joint of lamb, before you go? And they had the meal and with mint sauce and off they go. And she had that little smile and went, do, 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 do. Yep, as if this pod wasn't long enough. But all very well, Barry, but how are they doing it? Is it just because they played Hull? Or is it because they're playing all these players that previously they weren't allowed to play?
Is it because of their new assistant manager?
Ooh.
Has he said keened up?
They've had 3 goals and 2 wins from 5 shots on target. Pow.
I haven't seen any of their games, so I don't know.
Me neither. Me neither. Paolo? Jacob?
No, all I did was speak to my mate who was at the game, covering it for a rival newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, experience. And he said Senderos is playing surprisingly well at the back because, they've let in 1 goal so far.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. I actually prefer not watching Aston Villa in action and then hearing things like that and conjuring up in my mind a sort of swashbuckling image of the new villains.
They're basically Borussia Dortmund.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. You see, I'm happy with that idea. And let's hope that no actual watching it is going to crop up and ruin.
Because the more you don't see them, the better they get.
Okay. Swansea, I saw them and they did look good. We talked about them. Newcastle Crystal Palace, 3-3. Big woof for big Neil Warnock and Wilfried Zaha.
Yeah.
I know you didn't say it. None of us really, because it wasn't on anyway, was it? But what an incredible story that is.
Yeah. Looked like Palace were going to get mugged of a point they definitely deserved. And in the end, both teams settled for a point. Alan Pardew weirdly blamed the crowd for this one, yeah.
Why?
Newcastle throwing away 2 points. He said, and I'm sure it made sense in his head, but I can't make sense of it, that the crowd were too excited and that sort of spilled onto the pitch and the players, instead of defending a 3-2 lead, sort of tried to score another goal and that's how they got caught out. So I don't know. I mean, Alan Pardew's record with he's not popular with Newcastle fans. They want him gone. He's asked, judge me after 10 games. And the thing is, I mean, in their last 25 games in all competitions, Newcastle have lost 16.
Oh,
that's a pretty appalling record.
Poor.
I quite enjoyed him talking about Alan Pardew talking about the spirit of the game as well in his interview afterwards, because he felt there was too much stoppage time, 5 minutes. They scored in the 95th minute, and he was saying, you know, should they have had that amount of stoppage time, given that they were the ones who were time wasting from the first whistle.
Mm.
And, you know, in the spirit of the game, you think you did headbutt another player.
Mm. Or a player, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. QPR, first promoted team to get a win. They beat Sunderland 1-0. And is Jermaine Defoe going to sign there today?
That seems to be the story.
I just saw a tweet off Matt Law from the Telegraph saying he's been offered to Arsenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
On loan.
Ooh. Hey, listeners, you know how this story ends, don't you? We're still yet to make that happy discovery. Well, I tell you what, amidst all that confusion, let's just leave that alone. We can talk about it on Thursday when otherwise we'll have to talk about internationals. And we'll move straight on to West Ham Southampton, unless there's something else you wanted to say.
Well, it's just a Harry did away with his back three experiment, played four across the back in that game. Patrick Van Aanholt looked very impressive for Sunderland, and they seem to be on the verge of signing Sebastian Coates from Liverpool.
They'll get their Coates.
And if they do, kind of works that means the very, very tedious Fabio Borini saga will end, because you can't have more than one player from a club on loan.
So. Is that so? I did not know that. You can only have,
as far as I know,
a loan signing.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And we'll finish off then with West Ham Southampton. I think we started the match well. They play an easy system. They play long ball and fight for the second ball. It was Ronald Koeman on your lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was meant to be a new look Hammers side, full of vim and brill. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, that will all change when Alex Song... It will come back when Alex Song comes back.
Do you think?
No. It was pretty desperate, but Southampton were great.
Right.
Yeah, there we go.
They were. Were you there at Upton Park?
I was, yeah.
Were you booing?
No, booing's a weird thing to do.
Okay.
Johnson Wilson wrote an article about booing.
He said it was an essential part of...
yeah, but needs to be done sort of tactically.
Right.
Because he was talking about, I think, the Germans turning up to play a World Cup game in Belo Horizonte, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And there was footage shown in the stadium of the getting off the bus. And the Brazilian crowd booed. And Jonathan made the quite salient point. This is his marvellous logic, which I always love about him, that... Why are you booing them? You know, you're showing you don't want them to be there. If they're not there, the game you've paid to see won't take place.
Right.
And what a waste of time that would be.
And it's essentially a compliment in that context as well.
I suppose
it
is, yeah.
Can I... are we going to have Defoe in there at all or not?
I don't know.
I'd only throw it out there because I thought this and I just wanted to check it. He's injured at the moment. He's had a groin injury and he's going to be out for several weeks, apparently.
Oh, that's perfect. So, fits right into the...
So it would seem like a bit of a weird one for Arsenal to suddenly...
It's not like Arsenal have ever bought an injured player on transfer deadline day before.
True.
Did he actually ever play for them?
He scored a cracking penalty in the semi-final against Wigan. It was really good.
Kim Schallström, as I think he's...
Yeah.
It was. And Southampton look intriguing, don't they? I think they're an intriguing bunch, Southampton.
The Italian striker, Pele or Pella, how is it pronounced?
Graziano Pele.
Pele. He was very good.
Yeah, he scored,
which is weird, because he was really bad against West Brom.
Mm.
He's a very big man, but he looked very cowardly and wasn't good in the air either. Cool. But he seems to have found his mojo.
Yeah, and Tadic as well was brilliant.
Mm. Good.
And Schneiderlin as well.
Mm.
Two goals. Completely random midfield.
All right. And that's it then for today's Football Weekly. Thursday, we will be back as normal doing Football Weekly Extra on the midweek internationals and all
yes.
that. Wow. That's going to be quite the show, that one. And then, so big is the international weekend that not only are we going to do the podcast that morning, but then we're going to head up to Manchester for the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And we've got that show. What time is it, producer Ben? 7 o'clock, doors at 6:30, where? Royal Northern College. Royal College of Northern Music, says Ben. Tickets, I mean, it's sold out, obviously it has been for weeks, but you might just be able to get tickets on the black market or by calling the box office.
Right.
Anyway, well, maybe we'll see you there, hey listener. Otherwise, we're delighted that you joined us today. Many thanks, Barry, for coming in.
We're going to be like Phil Collins. you know, doing the two gigs.
That's right.
Where did he go? Philadelphia?
But he was at Wembley first, and then he got on a Concorde and went to Philadelphia.
We're getting on a train to Manchester.
Exactly. Any Phil Collins anecdotes, Paolo?
None.
Okay. Thanks for being with us anyway today. Thank you, listener. Thank you, producer Ben. We'll see you Thursday. Have a super transfer deadline day.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.